Good afternoon, and thank you, all of you, for joining us today. I am Jennifer Hanna, Deputy Director of ASPR's National Healthcare Preparedness Programs, or NHPP branch. And before I hand it over to our first presenter, I would like to provide a brief overview of what we will cover today. Next slide, please. First, I will provide a few ASPR Healthcare Readiness Programs updates. Next, Erica Thomas from CIPR, which stands for Strategy, Policy, Planning, and Requirements, will provide a brief update on the Hospital Association Year 2 end-of-year data collection. Afterwards, Lyle Moore will provide an update on the success of the Colorado Transfer Center. Finally, we will leave some time at the end for questions from the audience. Next slide, please. Great, thank you. So I'd like to begin today with a couple of administrative updates. First, I'd like to announce that the HPP recipient fact sheets for 2021 are coming soon. The fact sheets include key programmatic information such as funding levels, spotlights on preparedness and response activities, and COVID-19 response highlights for each of the 62 HPP annual cooperative agreement recipients. And I know while all of you may not be are an HPP recipient, we know that many of you are involved with our HPP cooperative agreements. And a member of our team will drop a link to the website with the 62 fact sheets for your reference. Next slide, please. Next, we would like to take a moment to spotlight ASPR social media channels and all of the engaging content that is available to you through those platforms. ASPR is active on all major media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. And its social media posts contain a wide range of content, such as major news headlines, job postings, recipient impact stories, and features of newly published healthcare readiness resources. We invite you to follow ASPR social media at the handles on this slide to stay up to date on everything ASPR. That wraps up today's highlights. I will now pass it over to Kate Gorbeck to introduce our next presenter. Kate?
Thank you, Jennifer. Hi, Hospital Associations. It's so great to connect with you all again. I love seeing the familiar names and faces. I'm happy to introduce Erica Thomas of our CIPR evaluation group, who will be running the show from the evaluation side for the end of year reporting this year. She and I worked on revising the performance measures for year two reporting, so I'll hand it over to Erica to go over some of those small adjustments.
Hello, everyone. It is great to meet you, and I'm excited to be here with you today. As we look towards the end of the data collection year for year two, we anticipate data collection to begin on June 1st, 2022. Jennifer and I will keep everyone updated on data collection methods, and we will be assisting with office hours to answer any question as June 1st gets closer. There will be minor updates to the performance measures this year, all small things that will make data collection smoother. We're collecting data for funds spent and activities conducted during performance year two, that's April 10th, 2021 through April 9th, 2022. We're adding that language to some performance measures to make super clear. We're splitting up the infection control and triage questions, so you only have to answer yes if you've completed the activity. The extra questions won't pop up for activities you haven't completed. We're retiring the measures on telehealth and the questions which subrecipients receive their funding within 30 days. You don't have to answer in year two. Overall, very similar to year one. We're going to share the old implementation guide for year one performance measures in the chat now. And just know that we're working on publishing a slightly edited version of questions soon. Next slide. I will open it up to any questions from the audience.
And Erica, I'll start off with a quick question. Can you remind us when the end of year data collection is going to be?
So the data collection kicks off on June 1st, 2022.
Great, thank you. And how much time should end of your reporting take?
Thank you for that question. So the reporting period runs through August. Is that correct, Jennifer?
I think we'll probably have to check that one. I believe since it's opening June 1st, we'll check to see if we're going to be 30 days or if it's going to be, or if it will be 60 days. But we'll certainly follow up with everyone and make sure that you are given ample time to complete the report. I know probably potentially one of the other questions that folks may be in folks' mind is regarding CAMP, because that is tied to the data collection. And we are working very diligently to get CAMP stood back up very soon so that you can access that and we'll be able to complete those end of year reports online.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Hi, this is Howard DeLude from Rhode Island. I'm just, again, I don't do this full time and work on this, but I'm assuming there'll be a full set of instructions that kind of come out. This is just giving us the preview.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for that question. You're welcome. Thank you for that question. A revised implementation guide will be distributed. So what we've done and we've added in the chat, the implementation guide from year one. So you can have that as a reference. But again, we're working on providing the year two updated implementation guide for your reference. I do see a question in the chat from Matthew Mary. Thank you so much. If hospitals use all the funds in the first year, will they need to report for those hospitals for this year in CAMP as well? And for that question, I will have to get back to you on that. Thank you for your question.
I can help you out with that one. So as Erica's already stressed, you know, the reporting period for budget period two is April 10, 2021 through April 9, 2022. So if a recipient or a hospital or other healthcare entity subrecipient has not expended all their funds during the first year and did not expend any funds or conduct any specific activities for the current budget period or for the reporting period, then they do not have to report for the current year or for that current year's data collection.
Thank you for that, Jennifer.
Just as a reminder, feel free to ask any questions in the chat or come off mute.
I'll just add, you know, based upon the information that Erica has already shared, just want all of you to know, you know, we looked very closely at your the data that was submitted for the last reporting period to see how we might be able to streamline some of the questions. And as she stated, you know, which questions could be retired. So we really appreciate everyone, of course, submitting the data as well as encouraging your subrecipients to submit the data because we want to make sure that we're able to demonstrate, as I'm sure all of you are very interested in doing as well, what has been the impact of this funding specifically for the hospital associations. As we know, I think when we first issued our release, the notice of funding opportunity, that this was the first time that we had structured a funding opportunity that went specifically, of course, to hospital associations. So you kind of guys are kind of a test case to see how successful we can be with this type of with this type of structure. So that's why, you know, one reason why we meet with all of you monthly to stay connected, to hear all the great things that you're doing, but also to be able to demonstrate the impact of the work that you are doing as well.
Thank you for that, Jennifer. Any other questions? Give a couple moments here. Looks like we have another question in the chat. I'll read it out. Will any of the subrecipients display as needing a report completed, or will there be an option to indicate they did not receive any funding during the reporting period? So it will be clear to who no longer needs to be submitted in the end of your reporting. In year one, everyone received funding, so all subrecipients displayed.
Jennifer, I'll pass that one over to you.
Okay. So, you know, without camp being online right now, I think we'll certainly have to take a look to see how that is going to be displayed. You know, and I think it's almost a two-part response to your question. Although your subrecipients may have received funding, did they complete all of their activities within year one? Or did they also retain that funding to continue to complete activities? Because as you all know, the project period and the budget period are five years. So it could be there are maybe instances where the subrecipient may have received the funding, but still plans to conduct activities, of course, in year two and in the subsequent years of the project period. So I think it's a two-part. Two-part answer for that. First, did the subrecipient receive the funding or not complete any activities within the reporting period? And then the second part of that is, or did the subrecipient receive funding and conducted activities within the reporting period? So I think that that's going to be a really important distinction to make and to have when you are reporting the data for the second reporting period.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you all so much for your questions. And thank you, Erica and Jennifer, for providing some insight into the end of your data collection. I think we're going to move on to the next presentation, but if anyone has questions, feel free to put them in the chat and we'll make sure they get answered. All right, next slide. I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to Lyle Moore from the Colorado Hospital Association, who will be presenting an update on the Colorado Hospital Combined Transfer Center. Lyle?
Awesome. Thank you, Megan. Can everybody hear me okay? Good to go? Yep. Awesome. Thank you. So again, my name is Lyle Moore. I'm with the Colorado Hospital Association, the Director of Hospital Preparedness. I want to thank you for inviting me to talk a little bit about the CHTC. We are actually currently going through an after action hot wash session in another room here in CHA. So this is really timely, and hopefully we'll give you an update on how the CHTC worked through this last wave. Next slide. So just as a quick reminder to everybody again, where that CHTC fit in. So the state of Colorado did not have a statewide transfer center or system. Everything was done just within this, the actual health systems themselves. And so what we were finding was a lot of our transfer center calls increased to where, you know, a provider at a hospital trying to find a bed for somebody would end up hours versus, you know, minutes from prior to COVID response. So this is basically where we fit into that piece within that system as well. So when that sending hospital ends up having those issues, The CHTC comes in and assists with finding those beds and that receiving facility as well. Next slide. So our scope again, you know what it is, transferring patients across hospitals and systems. This is when the number of patients are exceeding the capacity of those hospitals, or more specifically, even some of those transfer centers themselves. And how do we do it? You know, we don't have a building. We don't have a system or a set place. It's basically an ad hoc convening of those hospital and health systems transfer center leads in order to help facilitate that transfer. Next slide. Where do we fit with all of this? Well, we saw ourselves kind of fitting with, again, within that State Emergency Management Operations Center. EMS, MAC as well was another piece of this. And then the healthcare coalitions was another part where that situational awareness, whether it's out or in, information is apparent or needed for such a system to work as well. You know, on the backside, the CHTC is connected to all those hospitals, all of the systems themselves as well. So you can see how this puzzle kind of continues to increase and continues to connect with each other as well. Next slide. So last time I talked to you, these were the original tiers. We had three tiers separated out by the number of ICU beds, you know, or case counts within each of those regions. So while this worked for the most part for the start of the first wave, the CHTC leads got together and truly reworked the whole system. So not only did we build the original on the fly, we turned around and repaired it on the fly as well during that second, or moving into that last wave that we had in the latter part of 21 and the start of 22. Next slide. So we started off with some objectives. One of the things that we continually found within moving through this process was we needed to make sure that everybody was transferring in that same manner. So making sure that everybody understood what we're really trying to do is get that appropriate placement for those people. You know, we're not just trying to offload an ED here. We're not working on that waitlisted patients. You know, really what we're trying to do is the right patient, the right bed at the right time. We built some additional triggers to work with some of this due to the fact that we felt that the original triggers just weren't working and just really lent a little more confusion and it just didn't work. Let's just put it that way. So we wanted to make sure that the CHTC was not the designated entity, even though we weren't an entity. Again, it was that ad hoc meeting, but it wasn't that entity that kind of regulated those actions that needed to be managed by each of the hospitals. So in other words, once when we started ratcheting back some of those electives or some of those voluntary procedures, that wasn't the CHTC's job to make sure that that was happening. This is the CHTC is truly built on that trust and that working together and those working relationships that are out there. We also turned around and built that escalation process. So if there was an issue that continued to happen with transferring a patient and we still couldn't find something, we started off with that partnered system, moved it to that CHTC lead, and then finally CHA stepped in. And I made a few calls to work out some of those issues that we continually found. And then, you know, either adjusted what was going on or a lot of the times it was a lot of education working through some of those traveling providers, and which created issues that when they show up and they don't know the procedure that's already out there or process. So we felt that escalation process needed to be created and included within this tiered system as well. Next slide. So we start off with tier zero. This is a normal state, basically. Everybody's transferring through their normal transfer procedures. Everybody's working the way it is. They're in the state of Colorado, we use EM Resource as one of those data collection situational awareness tools. And so there has not been a CHTC tab requirement within there yet. Again, everything's steady state. Next slide. So this is tier one, where we start matching up those rural facilities. And we built off of that capacity scenario was one of those triggers. Whether it's that one facility or 20% or more of the patients in that regional assistance through the CHTC, that's when we start enacting this. So tier one's really about making those connections with all of those facilities. So all of them are allowed to select that system, that health system that they would then match up with. And in those health systems, that would give those facilities that one call instead of those multiple calls trying to find that bed. We agreed as a CHTC group that once when that call would happen, it was on that system to then find that bed, whether it's within their own, whether it's within some of the other partnered facilities as well. And that's when we get into the next slide. This is basically what that looks like. So basically taking all those rural partners, matching them up with that CHTC system lead for that, and kind of making them a part of that system, so to speak. Next slide. Then we move into tier two. This is when we get 3 to 5 of those systems that are having issues or need that escalation to the CHTC in order to find those beds. Tier two is actually when we start looking at bidirectional transfers as well. That's what we were calling it. So in other words, a rural facility needed to transfer a patient up for a higher acuity to a system. The system then would in turn exchange or bidirectionally transfer somebody down to that rural facility, because we also started seeing or came to the conclusion that it's really about throughput for a lot of these bigger hospitals and systems in order to continue moving those patients and having that room for them. So in tier two is when we start looking at that, but then we also start looking at escalation of those surge measures as well, making sure that that's pushed out there that, more of those electives should be reduced, our meeting cadences increased. So when we move into tier one, we start having weekly CHTC lead meetings, but then also monthly all stakeholder meetings. So the all stakeholder meetings are everybody that's within or has that stake within that transfer. So that ranges from all the rural facilities, the systems, the healthcare coalitions, the RETACs. Those are our regional emergency trauma and advisory councils that really work with EMS moving forward with that. State health department as well. We started bringing in state health and emergency management. We felt that within this stage, we're starting to get to that point where some of our systems can't find homes for those people, and we have to start exchanging within the systems. But then due to the fact that gaining those resources that are needed or potentially needed to help with that throughput or to help with that finding those beds, we need to make sure that the state is involved so that they can start working on those, because we all know that it takes time in order to bring resources to bear. especially when you're looking at the state process or a federal process moving forward. Next slide. And this is what we're talking about when we look at tier two, where we've got now the system leads are starting to exchange patients within themselves as well. If one can't find it, maybe the other one can, and we start moving those patients, you know, and we're talking onesies, twosies, you know, not a lot, but there's, again, starting to see that increase, that surge, and that expansion that needs to go just past that one CHT system lead. Next slide. Tier three is our highest tier. This is when we've got four or more of those systems that are at capacity or exceeded. Again, this is that capacity scenario where, you know what, we have to start looking across the state, and the whole state comes together as one system. It's what as well. Those meeting cadences increases. So during this time, our all stakeholder meetings were happening weekly, and then the CHTC leads were meeting daily. And at one point, we had set up three separate meetings every day, because as we all know, even when we're putting in information into like EM resource or any kind of bed capacity, 5 minutes later, that number is more than likely changed and off. So we had actually set up three separate meetings within each day for those leads to get together and start working on that exchanging of those patients or finding that facility or that bed for that patient. We also had the CHTC determining some of those transfers as well. So here in Colorado, we have a mountain range that goes right through the middle of our state, basically. So transferring a patient from, say, Durango to the metro area where all this, where a majority of our resources really are here in the metro area, can involve 8 hours on a good day. And that's just a drive. We're not including an ambulance. We're not including more than likely the weather. Like today, I think we're up to about 10 inches of snow today. So, you know, add that on top of it. You're taking transportation not only out of a community where there's a potential in some of our rural communities that, you know, maybe they've only got two ambulances. So you're taking an ambulance out of that community for more than a day at some point. We had to turn around and make some of those determinations on where to transfer. And in tier three also, we started working on some of those other pieces like telehealth or a doc-to-doc call in order to hold that patient there at that facility a little bit longer than usual because we're still trying to find them a bed in an appropriate place. Even on our western slope, finding those beds became an exchange within those CHTC leads themselves, just due to the fact that transportation became such an issue. This is also where we were able to pull in the state and start working on developing an existing contract that then created additional EMS agencies so that we could start placing some of those ambulances in these other areas to help with those transfers as well. That was an important relationship and tie-in that we had with the CHTC, just due to the fact that getting those resources there takes so long, but then also just being able to look and have the state hear that these are the issues we're doing, you know, we need to start working on that. There was also some of the issues that we ran into when we started getting to tier three is, are those patients? And so we developed a quick informational sheet, a Google sheet that we then would share during our CHTC lead meetings. And if a system would have a patient that they just couldn't transfer, they would put them on this list. And then when we would come together for that meeting, we would talk through and walk through where that patient could go across the state. And we had different, we started off with, good golly, I can't remember how many different EEIs essential elements of information that we looked at in theory. And then after a few of those transfers where we started working through that, that got narrowed down quite a bit. So I think we're down to, I think it's like maybe 12 different pieces of information that we exchange or take from that patient, put on that list, and then come together and try and find that patient a bed, whether it's bidirectionally or even, you know, an exchange between the systems. But now we're looking across the state as well. This also comes with another piece of education, and that's educating the patient themselves and the public. That was one thing we just talked about in our AAR hot wash session, was making sure that we need to increase our communication to the public and our patients to let them understand that during this situation, when we are in this kind of a mode or this kind of a lacking in resources, available resources, you know, you might have to be transferred, you know, an hour out of the city in order to make room for somebody else to come in, or that's the only available bed that we have right now that fits your need. So we need to push you there. So that was problematic as well, but I think we worked through it pretty well with making sure, and the hospital association created a kind of a guide or talking points that could be used within those facilities when talking to those patients about, you know, we're actually at that point where we need to transfer you out, you know, a ways away to find a bed for you. Next slide. And again, here's that depiction of what that tier three looks like. This is when all of our systems are exchanging between each other, between their rural partners, doing that bi-directional flow, or even that patient exchange within each of those leads also, in order to just find that bed. Next slide. So this is our quick timeline that we created as well. As you can see on the left-hand side is November 1st of 2020. That seems so long ago, but our first activation, we activated tier one, and we deactivated on February 1st of 21. Within that time frame, we had transferred 3,249 COVID transfers. Now that's something else that the CHTC had to work through as well, that this was not a typical emergency incident. This emergency incident changed as it moved through these years as well, which had differing ripple effects upon not only the health systems, but also the hospitals out in the rural areas as well, whether it was staff or PPE at this time during that first wave, or just those basic beds and the treatments that go along with that, whether it's ICU or basic treatment. But then as we moved into that newer wave, we started getting more, you know, more numbers of patients coming back to the hospital that had stopped doing, you know, or stopped going to the hospital for whatever treatment. And now they came back and it was an exasperated treatment, or their treatment took longer, you know. So not only were we getting Omicron and all of the patients that was bringing in, we started getting more and more patients back too. So that's just, and let alone the staffing, you know, staffing has a ripple effect that's truly amazing, an amazing hurdle for healthcare, and it's going to take, you know, years to get back to. But either way, our second activation started in August 30th, where we started off with a tier one activation. And honestly, we skipped tier two and moved right into tier three by November 1st. And at this time, we also changed some of our clientele, those patients that were being transferred. In the first wave, as you can see, it says COVID transfers. And the second wave, it was total transfers. We were having to transfer people for capacity sake in order to free up some of those beds for those COVID patients. And so during that second wave, halfway through it, or a couple months into it, we actually changed into those total transfers when we activated to that tier three. During that time from November 1st to February 27th, we transferred 47,608 patients within that system itself. So as you can see, a tremendous increase with the transfers. And then finally, we deactivated here March 1st. And right now are going through that AAR process, but we're also meeting quarterly now. The CHTC will be meeting quarterly as we move forward, just to stay on top of all these other different aspects that are going on. So not only just watching all the transfers and COVID and all of that, but the relationships that have now been built with the CHTC, all of those transfer leads want to keep those going, and working together instead of more in those separate kind of system alleys or those system silos that they were previously as well. I think that's my last slide. Yes. Awesome. Questions?
As a reminder, feel free to come off mute or put any questions in the chat.
Hello, this is Jennifer here at ASPR. And while we're waiting for questions to queue up, I'll get things started, and while people get their get the juices flowing, and hopefully maybe to help stimulate some additional questions. But first, thank you again for presenting this. This is really great information. But you answered one of my questions when I noticed on the timeline that you moved from tier one to tier three between September and November. And I guess my initial question was going to be if this really was a stepwise approach, or could you skip a tier? So you already answered that question for that. But just wondering, just kind of with the overall process here. So how has the transfer center infrastructure influenced your response planning in Colorado? We know that this was applicable and worked really well within COVID, but in thinking about wildfire challenges, which we know do occur as well.
Great question, Jennifer. Yes, the CHTC is starting to discuss moving into an all hazards kind of approach and building that into the plan as well as we move forward. A lot of these different pieces can be applicable for an all hazards event. And those relationships that are already there and present actually have helped with some of that already as well. As you saw with our Marshall Fire, where we had a wildfire that moved into an urban setting with hurricane force winds that then just, decimated a huge area. And in the background, because one hospital needed to evacuate because they had flames coming up to their doors, another one partially evacuated. And I just heard the other day they had actually had people on the roof of the hospital with water putting out the embers, the flame embers, because it was blowing. And these two hospitals are miles apart. That's how far the embers were blowing. So basically, in the background, due to those relationships built with the CHTC, those leads were already talking to one another. And that's another good thing I should have included in the presentation as well. One of the means of communication we used was texting. We started off using emails and setting up those meetings, and if we needed an impromptu meeting, send out an email. But then due to the fact that during this incident, everybody's email boxes increased exponentially, some of those were starting to get buried. And so we ended up setting up a simple text group and would then start communicating the need to move into a meeting situation. But a lot of that communications was moved through simple phone texts as well, which then occurred during the Marshall Fire where they were talking back and forth already. So I think that we'll see that change or that movement into that all hazards. It's just going to be, you know, a matter of having some breathing room and some time to then, you know, start writing that and working that out with the state and how we incorporate this. Because again, this is not a state plan. This is a plan that was developed by the hospitals with CHA and kept there. So how do we incorporate that into a statewide plan is another piece moving forward too.
So when you were activated at the kind of at the tier three level, you know, you mentioned about the, you know, with the staffing shortages, and we know we heard that quite a bit across the country. But when you were kind of at that T3 level, at that tier three level, then I mean, how do you address or manage, you know, to maintain the staffing to be able to support that, you know, that type of escalation?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that's you know, hero syndrome that a lot of medical staff have within themselves. You know, the transfer centers have that finger on the pulse of what that bed capacity is within each of those facilities within their system. And so, you know, just working through that and then making sure that the state knew that this was creating a problem, that then I know that the state stood up, and I can't remember the date, but they stood up a state staffing solution center where they were trying to pull in, you know, the traveling nurse group and all those different aspects and then pushing them out. So there was no way that the CHT was going to solve that, but hearing the issues within the CHTC to then be, you know, communicated to the state, let alone just having a state representative on those CHTC calls, helped to quicken that process and, you know, get to what could best be done, because I know that there was no way everybody was going to be completely full in order to handle what they did handle. There just wasn't enough staff out there, or we just didn't have enough money to pay for the staff that were now tripled, quadruple the cost of, you know, what some of those traveling providers were asking, or those staffing services too.
Thank you. I'll pause for a minute to see if anyone has, if any of our audience has any additional questions here. Just a reminder, as Megan has stated, you know, you can certainly ask a question in the chat, or either we can unmute you and you can ask your question live. Okay, so again, while we are pausing, Lyle, I have another question for you. So I saw on the timeline and you talked about deactivation. So, you know, after you have transferred these patients and then you get to the point of deactivation, how do you reset to normal, go back to normal?
So, yeah, that's a great question. And we created a couple of different methods. One, CHA puts out an electronic newsletter every day. It's called Health Beat, and that goes out to multiple points within all the hospitals across the state, whether it's at the C-suite level, emergency management, all the different pieces. We push out that communication and that step level down on how we move down, but then also what that entails. And that final de-escalation or that deactivation process, we also included an all stakeholders meeting where we had all the stakeholders again brought back in for one big meeting to provide that information out, but then also provide some of those opportunities for questions, that we could help to eliminate there. The CHTC group, the system leads also agreed that individual meetings with each of their partnered facilities was a good thing too. And so they had actually had meetings with their own partnered rural hospitals also to walk through those steps and how we're moving back to normal. And then that day we just moved back to normal. So it was a lot of communication, and I'm sure that there's, multiple pieces that didn't work, just as communication always, you can always find improvement that way. But we tried those, three separate movements or those three separate methods of communication, CHA HealthBeat, the all stakeholders meeting with everybody, and then each of those CHTC leads actually having meetings with their partnered facilities in order to communicate that.
And do you anticipate, when you do get to a point when you do have a lull, I think we all would love to get to the point to have a lull and a little bit of a break. But during those, at some point when you do get kind of a break and get some time period, some downtime as well, are you going to, are you planning to exercise this at certain times as well?
Yeah, definitely. We've already been working with the NDMS project and looking to see the value of bringing the CHTC into that process. And we're going to have to build those triggers off of that, as well as if we do finally move into that all hazards approach, what does that look like for the different regions, for the different areas within our state as well. And hopefully once we get incorporated into the state's emergency operation plan, well, that gets, activated and exercised at moments too. So hopefully, yeah. And like you said, once we get that breather.
And are the CHTC leads, are those in the, specific individuals that have been identified to serve in those lead roles? Or is that more of a role where multiple individuals so that you have redundancies in place can serve in that or staff that particular position or as a lead?
Yeah, great question. And yes, each of the systems were allowed to designate. It started off with the CMO group and then quickly kind of transferred over into the transfer centers and the people that run those. And then I made sure that and pushed out that we want that redundancy as well. My background's more emergency management, so I'm always pushing for that three deep. We didn't get it all the time, but we definitely had multiple people within each of those systems to help out.
Great, thank you. I'll pause again to see if anyone has any questions, but certainly appreciate you allowing me to kind of pepper you with some questions as well. This is of great interest to us. So thank you. So again, if anyone has any additional questions, please feel free to enter into the chat, or we can certainly unmute you if you want to ask a question live.
I think I put everybody to sleep, Jennifer.
No, absolutely not. But I don't see any additional questions. So I think we'll move into kind of our general question and answer period before individuals can ask any question that you may want to ask of any of our speakers or any just general questions that you may have. And we'll pause here for that as well, and to see if there's any additional questions. Okay, I'm not seeing any questions in the chat, and I don't see anyone's hand raised if they want to, or if they want to come off mute. So I think we're going to just move into the closing or the final remarks, and then possibly let you guys get back to your very busy day and very busy schedules. But again, I want to thank all of our presenters for your time today, and then all of you that have joined today's webinar, for your active participation in today's meeting. As a reminder, we invite you to share any stories regarding how you or your member hospitals or other related healthcare entities are using the Ask for Funding to make a positive impact on your community. If you have a story to share, please fill out the stories from the field submission form or reach out to your assigned field project officer for more information. And a member of our team will drop the story from the field submission form link in the chat for easy reference. Of course, we look forward to hearing about the great work that all of you are doing. And we know that you are doing great work. And of course, want to thank you for all the work that you are doing as well. This has been a very long response. I know everyone is tired. But just to let you know that we appreciate everything that you are doing, and of course we know that the nation appreciates it as well. I'm going to get to give you about six minutes back on your calendar, and again want to thank everyone for joining, and have a great day. Thank you.